shuffle out of the shadows and find that eventually there we are, and what we are is still family.
Good morning. Our Monday family segment today starts off with a little story.
Please, two brothers were in my office fighting over Dad's football trophy and a Howdy Doody lunchbox.
That's Les Kotzer. He's a wills attorney with a focus on avoiding family fights over inheritances. He's the author of The Family Fight and Where There's an Inheritance, and his story continues.
And I took one aside in my office to try to bring some common sense to this. And as I was talking to this brother, off my desk came a massive law book thrown at his brother's head. The brother had violently took that book off my desk and tried to injure his brother.
To Lee Kotzer, more stories of inheritance problems, stories that are even more amazing than what happened last week when the jury came to a verdict in the Brooke Astor trial. Her son, Anthony Marshall, found guilty of stealing $1 million from the ailing New York philanthropist. He was sentenced to 25 years in jail. Eve Rachel Markovich joins us, a litigator who focuses on estate issues at families who aren't of the stature of the Astors. Good morning, Eve.
Good morning.
And Lisa Belkin writes the family and parenting blog Motherload for our partner, The New York Times. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
So how much of an electric third rail issue is this for families, the notion of what we're going to get from grandma and grandpa or mom and dad when they finally leave this world? Lisa?
Well, we fight over everything else with our siblings. Why wouldn't we fight over that? I mean, the relationship starts so early and it's so competitive. And then we think that suddenly it's going to change because we're now the grown-ups when our parents die. And it doesn't always work that way. I think if you have gotten along well with your siblings through your parents' life, you will get along well with them after your parents are gone. But if not, then not so much.
Whether there's $180 million at stake, as there was in the Astor estate, or just a lamp or a Ford Mustang, it brings out the worst in people, Eve Rachel Markovich?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have a case right now where the surviving children from a first marriage have actually gone to court to try to set aside their deceased father's marriage to my client simply for the purpose of depriving her of a trust which he set up for her.
And again, that's an amount of money, roughly how much?
The trust is, you know, well, it's a bit more than thousands, but they have spent over $2 million for a trust amount, which is not significant enough to merit it.
Okay, so it's a chunk of money that we wouldn't sneeze at, Celeste, right?
Yeah.
But listen to this fight, and this is Les Kotzer again telling the story about something that we would definitely sneeze at.
I was coming back from lunch with my partner one day, and I see this woman waiting for us in our parking lot, and she's waving this crystal figurine. She says, "I bought this from my mother. I want it back." My sister says, who's the executor, says, "I cannot have it." I said, "Ma'am, we are handling your mother's estate. You'll get your money from everything." She says, "No, I want this crystal figurine." And my sister says, "I can't have it." She said, "If I can't have it, then nobody's going to have it." And she took it and smashed it in front of my partner and myself in our parking lot.
So, Eve, Rachel Markovich, how do you advise people not to do things like this?
Well, there's a practical way, which is talk to your kids. I'm a firm believer in telling people what they can expect before you die, and it helps an enormous amount because, as Lisa said, this is all about family relationships. It's the same person that you fought with over who was going to get the front seat, and if you know what's going on beforehand, you're less likely to start a fight. The other issue is there's a legal provision called an interorum clause or a no contest clause. And if you're actually leaving something to someone in a will and you want to make sure that that person isn't going to fight the will to get more, you say, look, if you start a fight, you don't get anything. And that's actually pretty persuasive.
So, Lisa, I have to ask you, I actually had a friend whose grandmother passed away recently. And my friend, who is probably the most soft-spoken, easygoing woman in the world, called me up anguished because she had no idea she would care about where her grandmother's Shakespeare collection went. And suddenly she found herself getting in huge, massive screaming fights with her siblings about the smallest things. And she couldn't believe she cared about this stuff. Does this happen to a lot of people?
I think it does. I think that when families get back together, everyone becomes 15 again. I mean, they sort of get locked back into where they were in adolescence, and they find themselves acting in ways that are familiar because they used to do it, but don't make any sense because they're now adults. I think there is so much layered on top of the death of a family member that it brings out surprising things. And the only real solution, and it does not always work, is to talk about it in advance. And some people are comfortable with that, and that's a conversation some people just won't have.
So, Lisa Belkin, of course, you're a Takeaway contributor. You write the Motherlode blog. I guess this raises a bigger issue, and that is the courts are not appropriate places to resolve this. It's better around the kitchen table or the dining room table before mom and dad pass on into the hereafter, Lisa?
Yes, but of course you have to be discussing much more than just stuff. You know, you're saying, well, everybody get along now, and if everyone hasn't gotten along, they're not going to get along after this. I mean, sometimes transformations take place. I've noticed in my own family, when there's a death in the family, people have joined together in camaraderie in a way that maybe didn't happen when everyone was alive. But
Kumbaya,
it doesn't
really
last forever.
No, it doesn't last. Well, Eve, what's the best story you've ever heard of people who behaved responsibly, who took the appropriate steps and averted what could have been a catastrophe over the figurine or the $180 million?
Well, the best story is the story that never gets to the litigator. You know,
right.
Sorry about being so obvious about it, but no. it's
we love obvious.
It's interesting that Lisa, coming from a non-legal perspective, and me coming from a perspective where, you know, I actually make a living when we have these fights, we're both saying the same thing. Talk to people. And someone asked me the other day, well, as a child, should I sit down and ask my parents what they're planning to do with their wills? Well, the simple answer to that is probably not, because your parents might think that you're willing, you know, getting ready to kill them off. But from the parents' perspective, it is absolutely the best thing that you can do. And don't present it as, you know, this is a choice, we want to get your input. But just, look, this is what we've decided to do, and we want you to be able to talk to us about it while we're still here. You know, yell at me. Mm-hmm. Don't yell at your brother.
Well, it just goes to show you that what's a problem for the Astors can also be a problem for the Gillespies and the Smiths and the Joneses and everybody else. Eve Rachel Markowitz, litigator who focuses on estate issues and a partner at Markowitz and Rosenstock, thanks so much for coming to the studio.
Thank you.
Lisa Belkin, Takeaway contributor and writer of the parenting blog Motherlode. Lisa, as always, thanks.
Thank you.